With people's mental health becoming more and more of a priority, in this week's podcast, I'm going to be highlighting companies that are actually making positive changes in this area, but also looking at the companies that I think are making it worse. By the end of this podcast, you will have a greater understanding of how to look after your mental well-being, including how to live a happy and fulfilled life. Also, I'll be discussing what antidepressants actually are and how we shouldn't fear them. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of I Shouldn't Say This But. Hi, I'm Katie Leeton and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain Agency UK, and welcome back to my podcast, I Shouldn't Say This But. This is episode 3 of season 2. We're back, Dodds.
Yes, and this is the first time we're doing a sit-down episode without a guest.
Yes, so I didn't say with me as always is producer Dodds.
Well, I was just about to say we're both feeling very rusty.
And I'm not very well.
Feels like a long time since we did one of these.
So I think the bloopers are going to be high today because I am not feeling too great. And I've come in especially to record this.
That is true.
Yes, so this is the first episode that we have done for the second series that's just the two of us. The first two were guest related. The first one obviously was all about Baby Loss Awareness Week with the Miscarriage Association. And I just want to say a massive thank you to everyone who sent me such positive messages. And also to the people who sent me messages that say that that episode helped them in some way. It was a massive deal for me to be able to talk about my experience and put it out there in the public for fear of people thinking that I was doing it for commercial gain, I guess. And also, it's just quite a big thing to talk about. So to get the messages back that I did really meant the world. And yeah, I just want to say a massive thank you for all the support, but also to know that I have helped at least one person who's been through a similar situation is the reason that I did it. Yeah, I'm very happy with it. I'm really happy with it. And I think since then, I've felt a little bit of closure from the whole situation.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I feel now a lot happier than I did before, just in terms of knowing that I've helped other people and that turning that negative experience into a positive has definitely given me closure that I needed on the whole thing. So now I can move forward.
There was a lot of tears, wasn't there, when the episode went out?
Yeah, so we were actually recording the episode with Diane on the day that the episode went out. And we were in between two recordings. So we had the Diane one, which is Diane Young, the founder of The Drum. If you listened to that last week, there's so much value in that episode. I've re-listened to it to get a few tips on how to change my approach to certain situations and also a couple of book recommendations that she said in that episode. And it's definitely had a big impact on me. And it's actually helped with my management style. So I'm very grateful to that episode as well. So if you've not listened to that, I'd recommend you give it a listen. But we were in between recording that episode and also one with a body language expert, which will be going out next week, I think. And in between the two, we put the episode out, the miscarriage episode out. And by the time we'd finished recording the body language expert episode, I picked up my phone and it had loads of messages on it and loads of people supporting, putting it out there. And we were meant to be recording the promo for the body language expert, but I just cried a lot, didn't I? On you.
Yeah.
I really had a moment and I don't think I've really sobbed. It was a sob. It wasn't just a cry. I lost it, didn't I?
No, maybe no. It was justified though, wasn't it? Because it was like your phone had literally blown up with not literally, but it blown up with lots of messages. So I think it was just a bit overwhelming.
It was. It definitely was. I think I was just so scared of putting.
Yeah,
that
was the thing as well. Is you were scared.
Yeah, I was really scared about doing it, and I think there were only two real negative comments that we got, that I saw.
But they were neither of those that you would say were particularly negative. Do you know what I mean?
No, they were just questioned why I'd put it out on a public forum. But for me, as I replied, if I can use my platform to raise awareness of a charity that's not got that much awareness generally, to help people talk about a subject that is really defining as a person, then I've done the right thing in putting it out there on my platform. That's what the purpose of it.
Yeah. And like you said, literally it's a taboo subject. So yeah, you're going to get people that don't want to talk about it.
Which is
fine. And that's fine, but
it's everyone's journey is different. Isn't it? That's what we learned from talking to Ruth. That everyone...
She was brilliant as well. I actually fell in love with her.
I know. And the feedback I've had on Ruth has been incredible as well. Everyone loves Ruth. So yeah, I just want to say a massive thank you. I think that's probably, I probably went on a little bit too long talking about that. But yeah, just a huge thank you to everyone for supporting me in what has been one of the most difficult things that I've been through in my life. And thank you for listening to the podcast and enabling me to have a platform to help other people go through something that is truly, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. So thanks. I am now going to recap the podcast format for anyone that is new and that has not listened to the podcast before. So we do a roundup of the news, talk about a little bit of what we've seen going on in the world. And then we go into the main story in the news and we do a little more detail on that. And then one of my favourite bits that we do is admission submissions. They are back. You can leave your own admission submission. It's people that are listening to the podcast who write in and we answer their questions. And then the main topic of the week. This week's one is all quite mental health focused within both marketing and personal. So hopefully you will get some value out of that. Shall we dive straight in?
I think we should, yes.
It's been a while. Here's the news. It's been a big week for women and space. Space is big anyway, but this is a big week for women in space. It's the first time that two women have done a spacewalk, which is pretty big. Did you see Donald Trump's reaction to that? He tried to argue that they were wrong.
I've seen that he'd spoken to him. And
yeah, he spoke to them and tried to tell them that they were wrong, that they weren't the first women in space, which they said, no, it's the first time two women have done a spacewalk. And whether he meant to or not, he flicked the bird at them while sorting out his hair. Gotta love a bit of Donald Trump. Also, NASA have announced a brand new spacesuit, which will definitely be the spacesuit that takes the first woman to the moon before 2024. So a big week for women in a traditional field, which is male dominated, to move into the big wide world of space. I have said before on the podcast that you can't be what you can't see. So in doing this, these women are enabling other women and girls to see that the potential is there. And it's nice to see women pushing forward in fields that they are a minority in. Obviously, with things like women in tech, we get this quite a lot. The role models aren't there, which means do you know how to get to the stages you want to get to as a woman without having someone that you can look up to? And I think this is a great step for women in general, but also hopefully the job that we are doing on this podcast will help women in tech. Next story is something that I saw on social. Ronaldo is making more money from Instagram than football.
What?
Say what? Because he earns so much money from football. It's crazy. Ronaldo's reported income from Instagram makes him the platform's highest earner, ahead of Lionel Messi and Kylie Jenner.
He's the most followed star, he's the most followed person on the planet.
Wow. Wow. 186 million followers. So companies are paying almost $1 million per post. That's crazy. His annual wage packet for Juventus is $34 million, which is $14.7 million less than he receives from Instagram, which is $47
million. So $47 million from
doing a
Instagram.
Post.
Crazy.
Crazy. Do you think that the engagement on those posts is worth $1 million a post? That is a question
I would ask.
I wouldn't say so either.
I mean, you could spend $1 million better.
Using micro-influencers who've got a much more engaged audience. Seems daft to me to spend it on someone who's going to be doing all those posts and not getting the engagement from all those millions of
followers. Because 186 million followers, he's the most followed person on the planet, but that doesn't make him the most influential person on the planet.
No, it doesn't.
By
it
a
definitely
long shot.
Doesn't.
So I think you could, I mean, obviously Nike, it's good to be with Cristiano Ronaldo, but I don't think he did like a shampoo one, for example.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called. Oh, it's Clear. It's called Keep a Clear Head. Like, right. I don't think you need, I don't know how much that would cost him, but like, you're better off just doing local influencers.
I'm with you. I think influencer strategies definitely need looking at. I think we'll cover that, I think, in another episode as it develops. But for me, that's crazy money to be spending on an influencer where you don't really know what you're getting back for that money. The third story of the week is that 30 leading companies have signed up to a mental health commitment. 30 organisations, including Barclays, Royal Mail and John Lewis, have signed a commitment to recognise the importance of providing staff well-being and good mental health, which is obviously something that we do organically within Social Chain anyway. We understand the importance of focusing on mental health and well-being within the workplace. We're in work so much. We spend a lot of our life here. And if you are not happy here, it can impact so many other parts. So knowing yourself and knowing what's right for you and knowing what makes you feel good and what makes you feel safe and happy is very important. Now it is time for our main story of the week. I now want to move on to the main story of the week. And this week I want to talk about brand trust. And under the context of something that I spotted on the weekend on the TV. So ITV put out their documentary about Harry and Meghan and how the press sensationalise what they say and they twist and turn it into making stories. The irony being that an hour later on the news, the main headline on the news bulletin was how Harry and Will are at turmoil and they're no longer close and there's a rift between the brothers, which was definitely sensationalised from the programme. So they are doing what they were trying to promote shouldn't happen just an hour later. ITV also put out a mental health campaign, which started in Britain's Got Talent, which was a minute of silence to encourage you to talk to your friends and family about what you're feeling and what you're going through. It just seemed a little bit ill-advised and didn't really understand people. And looking at the sentiment in Social Chain data, what we've noticed is that it hasn't really picked up traction either outside of the charities, the mental health charities, and also the ambassadors that have got on board with the initiative. There's no one talking about it, so it's not gained any traction. And I think part of that is because there is a lack of brand trust with ITV. So there's a few things that I want to discuss here that could affect brand trust. First thing is that so many people complain. There were thousands of complaints about Piers Morgan and the fact that he is not right to be on the telly in terms of his approach to minority groups. In response to that, it came out that ITV actually gave him a pay rise around the same time. That doesn't lead to brand trust. And you're not listening to your viewers either. And then also in terms of brand trust, there's things like, and mental health especially, they're still continuing to put out Love Island, and people who go on there don't have the support that they need. And there's been stories in the news, obviously, about people committing suicide because of the pressure after being on Love Island, and also Jeremy Kyle being cancelled off the air a little bit too late after it went far too far and a granddad committed suicide after being on the show, after doing a lie detector test. So it really highlights for me the importance of brand trust and how to develop brand trust by not just saying something, by actually doing it. There's a good example in the US which I've seen, which is obviously the Gillette ad, which we all saw, about the modern man and how it's just showcasing the modern man, versus Dove Men. Dove Men have set money aside to help parents and new fathers fund part of their parental leave. They don't talk about it. They just do it. And in doing that and in living your values, you are building brand trust. Research from Endelman, the PR company, shows that brands benefit so much more when they engage with social issues and act on their words. So does this ITV campaign show that? I don't think it does. I don't think that they are acting on the campaign that they are putting out in trying to get more people talking about their mental health. Raising awareness is obviously good. We know that it's very important, but leading by example is so much better. And for me, ITV haven't done that. Now it is time for my favourite part of the show. We have a website that you can go to leave your admission submission, which is www.katieleeson.com. Leave your message in there and we will answer it in a future podcast. The subject of this one that we've had in reads how to find fulfillment. This is from a male aged 25. The message reads, "Hi, Katie. Everyone always talks about the fact that if you enjoy your job, then you'll never work a day in your life. And I was wondering how I'm supposed to find out what it is that I want to do with my life and do something I enjoy." It's an amazing question. And for me, in the whole of last series, the theme that came out of it most strongly on the podcast was really understanding your values. And in knowing your values will help you make sure you're in the right job, doing the work that makes you feel the most fulfilled and happy, and also just really help you drive forward with where you want to get to. I've been in a position myself where I've not really known what my next stage is, how to get there, or what it is I want to be doing. And I think in a world where we work in, where it changes all the time, it's really tricky to see where you can end up in the future. So to start by understanding your values and what makes you you and what drives you and what gives you the most fulfillment is a great way of doing it. There's a three-step process to finding fulfillment. And it takes time and they change. So I wouldn't want to say that people, you could do this exercise and that's it, you're set for life. As you go through your life, your values may change slightly. But I've done this exercise and it was actually really fascinating to stop and think about myself, what I really value, what drives me. And the big thing for me is how to explain your values. I listened to a great podcast about it, which we will put in the link, the Amazing If podcast, about how to find your values. And you've got to really explain the meaning behind why you've chosen those values. It will help you with future decisions and it will also help you right now, making sure that you are acting in a way that lives with what's true to you. So I will talk to you about my values and how I got there and then tell you a little bit about how it's impacted me since I realised what they were, because in my 35 years on this planet, I've never really thought about my values until now. And it's been enlightening. I kind of knew what it was that made me feel content, but not until I did this exercise. My first one would be achievements. So I take pleasure in completing tasks and also doing things and doing it well. Part of that is getting praise for it. But yeah, I really enjoy achieving things and looking at what I've done and thinking I did that. That's really good. Learning, which I've talked about obviously on the podcast before, that learning for me is a real driver. And I've noticed it whenever I've moved jobs. It's because I couldn't feel like I could learn any more than what I was doing. So looking out for new learning opportunities is something that always drives me and something why I think social chain really hits home with that value, because I'm constantly learning something new. Caring is something that I just do inherently. And I care about people and I want to make sure that everyone is happy and fulfilled, which is part of the reason why I'm talking to you about value, so you feel the same, and also why I'm getting everyone at Social Chain to do this exercise. Humour as well. I have to find the fun and laughter in situations and enjoyment when I'm being a bit daft in a situation and I can feel like I can let my guard down and just be a bit silly. And also actually part of the caring piece is about social intelligence and understanding people and knowing when they are a little bit out of whack and stepping in to try and fix it as quickly as possible, which fits in with the role that I do at Social Chain. So if you can take that time to really understand your values and what drives you as a person, both in work and out of work, it can have a really big impact on the work that you do, the where you put your focus, and also as a leader, the teams you build around you, because you and everyone's values are very different. No value is better or worse than anyone else's, but we're all very different. So you can build a really strong team around you if you understand the values that you lack and what the company needs and how to find the people that will help you drive that forward. To define those values, what I did is I took a step back and I thought about the times when I felt most content and the times I felt most happy within work and outside of work. And I reflected on what was important to me in terms of who I work with, how I work, where I work and what I work on. And those things really help me think about the moments that I felt most content. And then I could then build my values off the back of that. So that's a really good starting point. It's really thinking about when you felt the happiest and also how you want to work and where you want to work and who you want to work with. So we'll put some links in the podcast because there's some really good tools to help you see values and what is a value and what people value against themselves, because that's a starting point that I didn't really know what to do. I didn't really know what qualified as a value. So I think looking at the lists that we'll put in the links will be helpful as well. And from there, you can start to really think about how to maneuver yourself into doing those things that you value with your future career and future job prospects and future companies. Now it's time for the main topic of the week, which is, I shouldn't say this, but I found benefits from antidepressants. Now, there is a massive taboo around taking an, or there was for me, a massive thing about me taking antidepressants. And it was only in May this year when I really hit my rock bottom and I was in a bad place. And I don't think that I have ever experienced anything like it before, in that I took a bit of time off work and then had to take longer off work because I just couldn't cope. And I just felt very lost and low and felt like I wasn't myself and I'd lost myself somewhere along the way. And I felt like everything, this is a really weird thing to say, but everything felt grey. I had no energy. I just completely just like lost myself in that time. And it was a mixture of things. It was a mixture of the miscarriage. It was a mixture of that relationship breaking up. And it just kind of all came together and it impacted me more than I thought that it would. And I tried to battle through it, which is what I always do when I'm not feeling myself. But this time was different and I knew that I needed to go and get some extra help. And my mum said, I think you need to go to the doctors. And I was so nervous and I put it off for quite a while because I didn't want to admit that I wasn't strong enough to get through it. When I went to the doctors, it was a big turning point for me. And I sat down and I was absolutely terrified of what they were going to give me. And they prescribed me with a very low dose of antidepressant and told me that I needed to start taking it. I needed to take it at the same time every day. And they wanted me on it for a minimum of 6 months. And in my mind, when she gave it me, I was like, I ain't going to be on this for 6 months. I'm going to be on it for a little while and it's going to pull me back out again and then I'm going to be fine. And there was a couple of things when I started taking it. And the realities of taking them is that you don't feel good for the first couple of weeks. You feel awful. You feel, you don't feel any better. They're not a magic immediate fix. They make you feel worse before you get better. And I got really paranoid about the time that I was taking them. So I started taking them at night, hoping that they would help me sleep because I wasn't sleeping. They didn't do that. They actually kept me awake and get my mind thinking more. So I was then really worried about changing the time that I was taking them. But my mum just said, just take them a little bit earlier for a couple of days. Just keep getting earlier and earlier and you'll be fine. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to wreck something here. I'm really paranoid with it being part of my mind that I was impacting and I didn't know what it was going to do to me. I've heard so many stories from people about how it turns you into a zombie and how it can really affect your personality. And I didn't want it to do that to me. And I was really nervous about it, but I knew that I had no choice. I knew that I needed to do something and I couldn't just carry on the way I was. So I got these, I started taking the antidepressants. First 2 weeks were really tough. Went to Centre Park for my birthday, just started taking them and I was kind of there, but kind of not. I really struggled basically. And then all of a sudden I just started to see the world a little bit differently. And what now that I've taken out of it is I can see happiness. I can see I can feel it again. And that's not something that I could feel before. It did make me a little bit dead inside, I'd say, from certain feelings. I don't really feel much now. But the main thing that it's helped me with, the pros, is that we've done so many speaking appointments, haven't we, in the last few months, Dodds? Mm-hmm. I can't even remember how many we've done. But we've done, I'd say about 20?
I think we did between January and November, maybe 8, no more than eight. And then from September, eight. And then from September to December, it's upwards of 20.
Yeah.
So it just seems to have all come out of nowhere.
It's all come out of nowhere.
And it's not something that you actively seek, is probably the nicest way to put it.
No, it's not. It's not something that I say, I want to do more. Yeah. But what I've noticed from taking these tablets, and I don't know if it's the tablets or whether it's me in a different mindset, that I used to get so worried and nervous about doing any sort of talk. And what they've enabled me to do is feel a lot more confident and not as nervous before I get on stage. So in a way, they've helped me be better at my job, which is a really weird thing to say. And I know a little bit of nerves is a good thing. It makes you perform better. I'm not saying I'm not nervous, but what I've not got is that absolute anxiety about getting on stage, which impacts my performance. So now that I know that I can just get on stage and do it. I'm still on them now, even though it's been 6 months and I don't feel like I'm ready to come off them yet. I'm a little bit scared of coming off them now because I'm worried about going back to that place that I was before.
What is it that you're scared coming off them? That you'll just go back? Do you not feel like you can take what you've, this feeling
yeah,
of
I
like
think...
nerves and stuff, and take that forward now? Because you're not the same person that you were before you started taking them. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. But I think I'm nervous about the tablets making me a different person rather than me being a different person. I don't know what it is, whether it's the tablets or whether it's me.
But having said that, if you do go back and you do start feeling nervous, now you've got 20 so examples of, just take the speaking for example, but this is all aspects, I guess, of your business thing. You've now got examples where the things you were nervous about didn't happen. And do you know
100%.
What I mean?
Yeah, you are right. You're completely right.
Easier said than done, I guess.
It is so much easier said than done. And as a worrier, a natural worrier, it's given me a brand new perspective on worrying, which is great. And I think as I can't be on them forever, it's not something that's good. It's a good thing for me to be on forever, but because mine's just obviously situational depression rather than anything else. So I can't be on it forever. And I think it's given me a real new insight into myself. I think it's definitely made me a better person. And it does seem funny now that I was so nervous about going on them in the first place, because now looking back, it's helped me be better, both mentally but also in my performance at work. So it's made me a better person. How I will feel when I start to come off them, I don't know, but I know now what my limits are, I think, which is great. And also I can appreciate feeling happy, which is a really nice feeling. Because as soon as you feel happy when you felt so low and you've lost that happiness, there's something really special in just appreciating that slight feeling of happiness. For me, the thing that scared me about antidepressants was admitting that I wasn't right. And I think I'm such a battler and I'm really stubborn. Part of my personality is that I'm incredibly stubborn. Don't shake your head like that, Dodds. I'm really stubborn. And for me to have to admit that I couldn't sort it out myself was the problem, was the stigma.
Did you not want people to know that you were on antidepressants, or did that not come into it? Like,
no, that
the social aspect of it?
No, that doesn't come into it.
Can you drink with them?
Yeah, these ones I can.
Oh, well. So there's nobody would just know that you're on them?
No, I stayed off alcohol for a little bit at first because obviously alcohol is a depressant anyway. And I think for me, because I wasn't in a great place, I didn't want to add to it. So, but I've never had a problem with alcohol anyway. I don't drink to forget things. I drink just for fun. So for me, it's not a problem. I don't have a problem with telling people that I'm on antidepressants. I wouldn't be talking about it in such a public forum if I did. But for me, it's something that's just helped me get back to me, but even an even better version of myself. So I was really scared because I wanted to fix it myself. And I think my main thing to take out of this is if you are struggling, don't be afraid to get help. Not all antidepressant is the same. And you can test it and you can see what works for you. It's going to be hard at the beginning, But for me, what I've found is the benefits outweigh that first couple of weeks. You've just got to persevere with it and be really sensible and be sensible with when you take it and not to come off it straight away. Once you start feeling a bit better, don't just stop taking it and self-diagnose, because you need the help of the doctor to come off them as in the right way, because that can have a bigger impact on you than actually taking them in the first place. So they, for me, they've given me a massive boost in my life. And I want to say that it's not all the horror stories that you hear. You might have a bad experience, but there'll be one out there that does suit you, and it's to work with your doctor to understand what the right thing is for you. And I can only say that I am a better human being from going through that and putting myself in that position and taking those tablets every day. I think that's probably a nice way to end it.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
I want to say thank you again for listening. Quite a serious topic to end on. And if you do need any help, then please, you can get in touch with us, speak to a friend or family, or get in touch with Mind, and they will definitely be able to help. Please don't suffer on your own. And please look out for anywhere that you can speak to someone, because I know better than most that it doesn't help to sit and try and figure it out by yourself. So I hope you are all very well and this helps in some way. If not, thank you so much for listening. Rate and review us. You will find us in Apple and on Spotify. And we will see you next week.